better world, one broadcast at a time.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel D.I.s. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a journey. Sound.
Redeem a fool of college.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
Put the finger roll! What's the foul?
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Collision. He's Etan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin. He played in the NBA 10 years. I did not. We've both written a bunch of books. We like talking about sports and politics, and we come to you every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern here at your home for jazz and justice in the DMV, trying to change the world one broadcast at a time. Of course, I'm talking about WPFW 89.3 FM. So much to discuss. Etan Thomas, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
My goodness, man. There's so much for us to talk about. I mean, a city where you and I have many people and many roots, a city people might have heard of called New York City. They just indicted the mayor. What's going on? Eric Adams. You and I need to talk about this in a big way, the whole Eric Adams situation, because there's a lot of angles, and I'm curious where you're coming from on this for sure. We also need to talk about Jaden Daniels, the quarterback here in Washington, D.C., absolutely blowing the NFL's minds. The last 2 weeks, zero punts, zero turnovers. 2 weeks in a row, Jaden Daniels has led an offense to zero punts and zero turnovers. Quick stat for you, Etan. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Drew Brees combined played over 1,000 games. They only did that once combined. Oh, no, twice. They did that twice combined. All of them throughout their whole careers. Jaden Daniels has done it twice in his first 3 weeks.
Yeah, 23 years old.
How is that even possible? What a player. I mean, in 3 weeks, he did what those guys did over 1,000 games. It's mind-boggling. So we're going to talk about him and whether we think he's the truth. There's some news to talk about regarding McLemore in Seattle, if we get to it, and the way that the Seattle sports teams are trying to freeze him out right now. He's like the Spike Lee of Seattle, you know, going to all the games and cheering people on and whatnot. They want to push him away now because of something he said at a concert that was pro-Palestine. You know, we're going to have to talk about that and what that means. Mm-hmm. But first, before we talk about anything else, the news of the day, something that we have been covering on this show for some time, Etan, And that's the WNBA this season. That's the explosion of popularity. That's the new fans that have coming into the league because they're super fans of former Iowa All-American, current Rookie of the Year for the Indiana Fever, Caitlin Clark. And some of the issues those new fans are bringing into the WNBA. And these are folks who seem to be more fans of Caitlin Clark than they are fans of basketball, or certainly women's basketball. Now, this has been going on all year. You know, this simmering tension has been existing since Caitlin Clark was in college. But WNBA, it's been taken to a whole new level. Last night, as you well know, Atan, Connecticut Sun beat Caitlin Clark's Indiana Fever in the playoffs. Send them packing, send them home. I believe the score was 87-81. Close game, good game. But that's not what everybody's talking about, is it, Atan?
Not at all. And we have a clip. Mike, could you go to the clip? And you're going to hear forward Alyssa Thomas at a press conference talking about what she's experienced this year and actually last night from the Indiana Fever fan base.
It's been a lot of nonsense. I think in my 11-year career, I've never experienced the racial comments from the Indiana Fever fan base. You know, we had her face on a serious matter that happened in this world, and it's unacceptable, honestly. And yeah, there's no place for it. And we've been professional throughout the whole entire thing, but I've never been called the things that I've been called on social media, and there's no place for it. And you know, basketball is headed in a great direction, but nah, we don't want fans that are gonna degrade us and call us racial names. I mean, we already see what's happening in the world and what we have to deal with in that aspect. And, you know, we come to play basketball for our job and it's fun, but we don't want to go to work every day and have social media blown up over things like that. It's uncalled for, and something needs to be done, whether it's, you know.
Wow. Let's also be clear, Alyssa Thomas, you know, that's UMD's own right mm-hmm. there. So somebody local, somebody who's 32 years old, somebody who's been playing pro ball for a long time. And she is saying with her institutional knowledge at 32 years old that she's never seen anything as bad as it is now, or called the things that she's being called until now. What's your take, Atan? What's going on here? Why are things so much worse now than a decade ago for Alyssa Thomas and her teammates?
I mean, it's the Caitlin Clark effect. I mean, it's not her fault. You know, this is not, you know, to blame Caitlin Clark. I think that she has been consistently, you know, kind of saying, no, don't use my name to push any agendas, you know, don't, you know, but. And there are people who are wanting her to do it more, but she said it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, but it is a definite element of the people who are, we've talked about this on the show, people who are kind of here, you know, now fans for the wrong reasons and celebrating her whiteness. And you see it in the comments and you see it on social media. And it's, you know, anytime you mention anything about Angel Reese or anytime anybody else is mentioned in the WNBA, it's shut down and nobody else matters except for Caitlin Clark. And it's just a, you know, it's just that element. And it's unfortunate to hear, because I was watching the game, I was, you know, kind of, you know, you scroll through social media sometimes and I saw a lot of tweets of people describing the atmosphere there. And they said it was very, very, you know, racially motivated, very angry, mentioned MAGA hats, mentioned t-shirts that had derogatory caricatures of, you know, the different players and all these different things that were happening. And, you know, it's just unfortunate to hear. But I am glad that her and her coach both spoke about it at the press conference.
Yeah, and, you know, I was reading a lot about the atmosphere at the game. Now, obviously, I can't speak to what was yelled, what was said. Early in the game, Caitlin Clark actually went to a referee and tried to get a fan removed for saying something. You know, we don't know if that was directed at her or something that was said, excuse me, more generally. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, Atan, that I was hoping we could try to help people about and educate people on is I saw a lot of people on social media extremely upset about, you know, people having signs that said things like cut your nails, or, you know, to Dejounte Carrington in particular, someone who keeps long fingernails on the court, or people making fun of fake eyelashes that people are wearing on the court. Now, that's racially loaded in a way that you wonder, like, do the fans get, do whether they're MAGA fans, whether it's just a case of white blindness, white ignorance, are they aware that they're really sticking a knife in to these players who are just trying to express themselves, be themselves, and do their own thing? What do you think about that dynamic? Like, it hit me hard because it made me think of, you know, criticisms of how Black people keep their hair. You know, I thought of the young man, you know, that cut his hair in the classroom, and this push around conformity to meet a standard that no one asked for, that's being imposed on the league by this new influx of fans. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's unfortunately it's capitalizing on racism. And I see it happening this entire season. This isn't anything new, but you just as far as, all right, let's talk about the aspect of, you know, certain elements of the media that have been kind of fanning the flames. And they are weaponizing Caitlin Clark. That's the reason why she came out and said, will you please stop weaponizing? We knew that wasn't going to stop anyone from weaponizing because there's too much profit in that, but that's what, you know, they were going to keep doing, and they did keep doing it. I think that one of the things that I've seen a lot is that this has to happen in order for the league to capitalize on the Caitlin Clark effect. And this is part of what you have to kind of accept, because these new people, whether they're racist or not, whether they're for the wrong reasons or not, whatever it is, they are coming there and bringing eyes to the WNBA. So you kind of have to take the good with the bad. And so I see the media really flaming it. I mean, so for instance, if you saw the first game, all right, Dejounte Carrington, she poked Caitlin Clark in the eye. I don't know if you saw that. She was going for the block. Her finger came down. She poked her in the eye. This huge uproar came after that about how she was, and they used words like assaulted her. I think Jason Whitlock said she stabbed her in the eye, and, you know, all these different terms that are specifically used in order to kind of stoke this racial tension, this racial, you know what I mean, animosity that they have to protect. And of course, Caitlin Clark didn't ask for all this, but they have to protect their delicate flower, you know, from these big, mean, vicious, jealous Black WNBA players. And that's like the narrative that has just been consistently pushed. You know, every time she gets fouled, oh, see, they're fouling her because they're all jealous of her and they don't like her, so we have to protect her at all costs. And that is part of the fanning the flames, because you've seen it. When you see somebody like Jason Whitlock repeat those things, and then you see those things actually visibly seen at the arena. Like, if you go to his Twitter, and he's been putting that out, oh, her fingernails, you shouldn't be after it. And then you saw those with the pictures and the signs and the T-shirts, you know, she should cut her fingernails. You know what I mean? And she's weaponized. She's using weapons, you know, fingernails as weapons. And all that. None of that stuff ever came up before. When anybody had ever got poked in the eye, everybody ever got scratched or whatever. But now, since it's Caitlin Clark, now it's a big issue. But that's one example of many examples that there are of the weaponizing of Caitlin Clark and the protect this delicate white flower, you know what I mean, from all the WNBA players that has been going on consistently this entire season. And it's a dangerous concept to push.
Mm-hmm. And there are a couple notes to say about that. Great, great points all around. I couldn't agree with you more about the presentation. But one of the things that's been putting a lot of salt in what you're talking about, a lot of salt in the wounds a lot of players have been feeling this year, is that the commissioner of the WNBA, Kathy Engelbert, was asked about this recently, about, you know, tension. Specifically asked about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, and is this healthy? Is it good for the league? And instead of Kathy Engelbert saying something not dissimilar to what you just said, or at the very least something more milquetoast than what you just said about, like, well, you know, with more popularity comes more tension. You know, there are tensions in our society. They're reflecting in the league. As a league, we want to make sure that everybody knows this is a hate-free zone. This is a racism-free zone. You know, that's what I think a lot of people expected her to say. But instead, she sounded more like Vince McMahon than somebody who's trying to look after the best interests of the league. Let's call it more Vince McMahon than I'll say it, Adam Silver. She was more Vince McMahon than Adam Silver. Like, Adam Silver's good at saying sort of like the calm corporate speak to make everybody just feel a little bit, you know, less like, you know, their hackles are up. That's, right. I think, one of his talents, even though I disagree sometimes with the kind of sweet corporate speak he puts down. That is his great skill as, let's call him, a CEO. Kathy Engelbert, Vince McMahon style, was like, hey, 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 whatever gets them through the door is all right with me. You know, magic. And she said something about Magic and Bird, you know, which is so glib and dumb. I hate the Magic and Bird thing for a lot of reasons that we can talk about, not the least of which, and there are a lot of reasons why I don't like it, but, you know, glomping that on to Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. But the number, you know, as a basketball fan, it offends me. But the number one reason why I don't like it is because it also paints this picture like what happened in 1979 with Magic and Bird was just la 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 fun and games. And oh, wasn't it cute that you had this racial divide around these players? When, if you were coming up in that time, you know, we might look back on it with, you know, because you've got all the documentaries with the soft music, and Bird and Magic are best buddies now. And you've got you had the HBO show and all this nostalgia. At the time, that wasn't good.
Right.
That was bad. You know, everybody being like, yay, we have a white player. This was not a good, this was not a healthy thing. And of course, happening right on the dawn of Reaganism, again, like reflecting the society as a whole in a big way.
So, and there was no social media then.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot. It's a lot that is surrounding the culture of the league. And Kathy Engelbert, I mean, I'm not saying her job is in jeopardy, but just a lot of people were really upset with how she handled it. So you have that controversy. That was like a week and a half ago or something like that. And then this happens last night. And it's like pouring salt into an already open wound, where a lot of players are just saying, you see, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because, you know, that is listed so often as to just the means to an end. Like the whole point of, you know, what the WNBA wanted to push towards and bring more eyes and bring more revenue and everything like that. So the defenders of this type of behavior is like, well, look, you wanted more people and now you have more people. And that's what you constantly hear. I see it on social media all the time, but it's like, wait a minute, you know, not like this. You want people who are coming there just to, you know, kind of have a negative, hateful kind of aura. That's not what you want. That's not the type of atmosphere that the WNBA wants to build. And they did issue a statement, the WNBA did. I don't know if you saw it, but they issued a statement. They tweeted it out, I guess, early this morning. They said the WNBA is a competitive league with some of the most elite athletes in the world. While we welcome a growing fan base, the WNBA will not tolerate racist, derogatory, or threatening comments made about players, teams, and anyone affiliated with the league. League security is actively monitoring threat-related activity and will work directly with teams and arenas to take appropriate measures to include involving law enforcement as necessary. Now, that statement should have came a long time ago. This is not the first time. This is not the first time anybody has expressed anything about the sentiment from the fans. I know they had to have seen it. It's been brought to their attention. You know, this statement should have come, you know, probably in preseason. It's good because it's been happening all season. That was my reaction to seeing this statement.
Well, also, Alyssa Thomas, bless her, all respect, is not the first person to have raised this in the WNBA.
Right.
This, like you said, it's been going on all season, and the WNBA is very known for having players who are not afraid to speak out. And sure enough, a lot of them have spoken out. Hell, Caitlin Clark was pressured to speak out, as you mentioned before, you know, maybe not as boldly as we would like. And she clearly didn't want to speak out at all, but the pressure of the moment made it so she had to speak out and say, hey, you know, if you want to be a fan of me, great, but don't bring any nonsense into the arena, is basically what she laid it out. I think, though, we're dealing with something deeper than this. And the deeper thing that I think the league needs to figure out, and it's going to take more than statements, it's going to take vigilance and it's going to take follow through, is that they want a bigger audience. They want more of America watching their game. They want that level of prominence. The problem is that this is still America. So while the WNBA has existed with smaller audiences for years, you know, you go to games and it always did have that kind of, and I think Alyssa Thomas was referencing this, that kind of community feel, you know, like, oh, we're all in this together. We're all trying to promote women's basketball. We're all the diehards, you know, here. We're the diehards. We're the pioneers. We're the ones who are going to put the WNBA on the map. And all of a sudden, it is on the map. All of a sudden, you've got these new fans, but you're letting in America. And as Alyssa Thomas again referenced, you know, this is not exactly friendly grounds for what these women are trying to do.
It's interesting because there are other white players who are already established, that are already in the league, that are already doing well. Breonna Stewart, Kelsey Plum, you know, you just keep going on and on. And I was trying to, you know, understand, why have they not been pushed the way that Caitlin Clark's been pushed? And the only thing I could come up with is they created a villain with Caitlin Clark, who was Angel Reese in college. And that's kind of kept going, you know, as she's gone through college and then into the WNBA this year. That's the only thing I could come up with. And I wanted to ask you this, you know what I mean? Because I look at the other players and they're, you know, it's not like Caitlin Clark was the first white player that ever played in the WNBA that could play.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, what is it? Why Caitlin Clark? Why, you know what I mean? And she's a great player. This is the thing. When you have a conversation about Caitlin Clark, people don't have an issue with Caitlin Clark. It's the issue with the fan base. And that's what people are always referencing. And then people go into this automatic, you know what I mean, kind of, you know, defending Caitlin Clark, and the conversation shifts. This is on social media, what you see, but it's like people don't want to acknowledge the fan base. It's not all Caitlin Clark fans, but there's a big demographic there that fall into this category. And if it wasn't, then you wouldn't have heard Alyssa Thomas say the things that she's said. But I want to pose this other question to you. Why aren't the other white players kind of pushed the way Caitlin Clark is?
Great question. I can only give an opinion, you know, like as they say, you know, opinions are like bleep. Everybody has one, you know, so I can only give my two cents on that. It's on. But I do believe very strongly that it's about aesthetics. Breonna Stewart, brilliant player, MVP last year, also plays kind of a She's very tall. She plays kind of this loping, slightly awkward game. You know, she's very effective. Caitlin Clark, I mean, she plays, it's like the shock of the new, you know? It's like having somebody in the women's game who can pull up comfortably from 27 feet away. I mean, it's the sort, it's going to be interesting with Juju Watkins coming out of USC, because I think just finished her freshman year, because I think Juju Watkins, who is a black woman, I think she also checks a lot of the Caitlin Clark special boxes, where you're seeing somebody who's doing it differently than it's been done before, who's doing it in a way that draws your eyeballs in a way that hasn't happened before. You know, pulling up for 27 footers with confidence, you know, as something that's that we just haven't seen. And I think Juju Watkins also qualifies as someone who we haven't seen. Now we're going to now have to answer as Juju comes up. We're going to have that question about, like, okay, how much of this, because we know it is, whiteness is a huge part of this conversation, as you said explicitly. Like, how much of this is whiteness, the Caitlin Clark phenomenon? And how much of it is the fact that she's hooping in a way that it's certainly not better? I mean, we all know Asia Wilson is the best player in the league by a country mile. It's not right. That she's the best, although she will be first team all WNBA her rookie year, which is, you know, pretty darn good. Set a league record for assists as a rookie, you know, pretty darn good. But the question then becomes, how much of it is the shock of the new, the genius of the play, the evolution of the game, and how much of it is, oh, it's a white girl from Iowa. Now we feel, and by the we, I mean that sort of mainstream MAGA-ish America, like, now we feel like this league is part of us. Oh, she has no tattoos. This league is part of us. Oh, no this, no that, no accoutrement we associate with, say, urban life. You know, oh, she's cool with, she's good on that front. And, you know, for Jason Whitlock, you know, the fact that she has a boyfriend is huge. You know, and he's made this very tied up in sexuality in a way that's super offensive. But it's just another piece of the picture in terms of how this has come together. So to me, Juju Watkins, we all know whiteness is a part of this at times, but Juju right. Watkins is going to be the test case to see how much is that part of how the needle is moving and how much of it is because the quality of play in the women's game is just something we've never seen before.
I mean, I hear you, but I look at players like, and I'll give you that because I was thinking Sue Bird, but you know, there is a different element. But then I was looking at Kelsey Plum. And I was watching the game against Seattle. It's the first game. She was phenomenal. She had like 30 yeah. points. She's sitting right in forever. I mean, she was phenomenal, but I don't, the only thing I could think of is that she doesn't have a villain. You know what I mean? They're winning, you know, but that, I don't know, that villain aspect is one that I think really pushes us over the hump, because they really made Angel Reese the villain in the counterpart of Caitlin Clark, you know, and it's so interesting because they don't even play the same position. It's not like they're guarding each other. They're just, right. you know, but they just made them, you know, opposing forces. You know,
that's right. Yeah. Right. And that's an important point you made, because one of the things about Magic and Bird, to go back to that, is, you know, they're both about the same height, 6'9". They're both amazing passers. They're both the people who the ball runs through on offense. Maybe they play different positions, but there's kind of a mirroring aspect of, they're both coming into the league. They're both going to the two most prominent franchises in NBA history. You know, they're, you know, Bird never smiled. Magic always smiled. There was this kind of dynamic that was just made for TV. And then when you slop on the racial garbage on top of that, that's catnip for TV producers and all the rest of it. This feels so forced. They play different positions. They're different people. They're playing in Chicago and Indiana, for goodness sakes. I mean, what, the great Midwestern rivalry of the W? Give me a break. You know, it just feels so much more grafted on than even Magic and Bird, in a way that frankly reflects the 21st century Elon Musk, social media driven ugliness that for as bad as things may have been in 1979, I mean, it's so much more out in the open and explicit now that you can, you hear it in Alyssa Thomas's voice about just how weary she is of, right, of just putting on her social media, which, let's face it, everybody does, except for people like Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark's all-star teammate, who had to erase her whole social media at the start of the season. And she's not the only player who's had to do that. And if you think about it, that's really messed up.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
To feel forced off of platforms.
Yeah, yeah. And that, and I think that is such a huge difference when people use the Magic and Bird analogy to say it worked for them, so let's let this work for the WNBA, to use the Magic and Bird kind of like model to be able to push. I was like, no, it's totally different. You can't compare the two. This is this is something different, and a large part of the difference is social media. I know we spent too much time on this. I know. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we go to a break? And I know there's a lot more that we want to touch on. The whole list of things. Goodness gracious. You know, New York Mayor Adams. I didn't quite see that coming. But yeah, let's go to a quick break and then come back and go through the whole list of what we have coming back in. Well, so we'll be right back with more of The Collision with Sports and Politics Collide.
When the lights shut off and it's my turn to settle down, my main concern, promise that you will sing about me, promise that you will sing about me. I said when the lights shut off and it's my turn to settle down, my main concern, promise that you will sing about me, promise that you will sing about me.
I woke up this morning and figured I'd call you in case I'm not here tomorrow. I'm hoping that I can borrow a peace of mind. I'm behind on what's really important. My mind is really distorted. I find nothing but trouble in my life. I'm fortunate you believe in a dream. This orphanage we call a ghetto is quite a routine. And last night was just another distraction or a reaction of what we consider madness. I know exactly what happened. You ran outside when you heard my brother cry for help. Held him like a newborn baby and made him feel like everything was alright in a fight he tried to put up, but the type of bullet that stuck had went against his will. Last blood spill on your hands, my plan's rather vindictive. Everybody's a victim in my eyes. When I ride, it's a murderous rhythm. And outside became pitch black, a demon glued to my back, whispering, get him, I got him, and I ain't give a f-. That same mentality I told my brother not to duck. In actuality, it's a trip how we trip off of colors. I wonder if I ever discover a passion like you and recover the life that I knew as a youngin' in pajamas and
thunder. Very strong track. We're back here on The Collision, where sports and politics collide. 89.3 FM, WPFW, your home for jazz and justice. Atan, who are we just listening to? My goodness.
That was Kendrick Lamar.
Yes, it was.
Thing about me, and he's quite a talent. Quite a talent.
What did you, I'm sure you heard about that he's been tapped to do the Super Bowl halftime show.
I did.
What do you think about that? Kendrick, I mean, he did two songs as part of the Los Angeles tribute Super Bowl halftime show with Dre, Snoop, Eminem, etc. Mary J. Blige, of course. What do you think about Kendrick doing it solo? And he'll have to do Not Like Us. You think that's going to fly in a Super Bowl arena? Like 80,000 people going A minor.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, they ran that song into the ground this summer. They're going to keep it going. I would be very surprised if he doesn't, you know, perform that. But I mean, he's the hottest rapper out right now. I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, for a little while was saying, hey, what about Lil Wayne? You know what I mean? What about Cash Money? And I get it, you know, but I mean, it's Kendrick Lamar. You know what I'm saying?
Right, it's Kendrick now, Lamar.
It's Kendrick Lamar, you know?
Yeah, and I've never, you know, Lil Wayne is an interesting one because you look at his sales and you think, oh, this must be the biggest, one of the biggest rappers on earth. But my experience is that it runs really deep in certain parts of the country and less so in other parts of the country.
I'll agree with that. Yeah,
would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. But that's the whole thing, that you're in New Orleans. So it's like, yes, you know what I mean? That's his backyard, where he is bigger than everything else. He's bigger than life in New Orleans. So I get that argument. But it's interesting, you know, a video resurfaced, and I had to post it myself, of Lil Wayne talking about his thoughts about Black Lives Matter and what it means to him. And I was just like, oh, gosh, I forgot about this. You know, I mean, it was
What did he say?
It doesn't mean to anything to him. Like, okay, right. One thing I'll say about Lil Wayne, his handlers, his people. Okay, how can I say this? He is usually very often in a certain mind frame when he is walking around. Is that a good way to say it? Okay, a certain state of I don't know what I was. Okay, he's high as a kite usually. I'll say it like that. He's high as a kite.
Gotcha.
So interviewing him, it's sometimes as soon as he starts talking, you're like, oh yeah, this isn't the time to interview him. But that being said, once you open your mouth, you're responsible for what comes out of it. True. And it was just everything that he said from the beginning to the end of the interview was absolutely horrible. It was horrible. Like, it couldn't have been worse. I was like, oh my gosh, Lil Wayne, are you serious right now? That was like my reaction. And it was like, nothing else matters to him. You know, somebody might get a shot. It has nothing to do with him. You know, then he pulled out his red flag. He said, this is what's important to me. You know, it was just horrible. That's all. And that was circling around. And there, a lot of people were like, well, I don't feel so bad. You know what I mean? About him not getting the Super Bowl. But
let me tell you, it's a great lesson, though. Like, don't do political interviews if you are under any kind of influence of anything. Because the words are going to stick with you forever.
Yeah.
So be confident in your words and your politics. You know, I would be remiss, Atan. I know we have a schedule of things we want to talk about, but I got to just throw in, because it relates directly to what you're saying, is Macklemore out in Seattle. And I'll give the quick story and then love your two cents on this. You know, Macklemore has been hardcore for Palestine and Palestinian liberation. He did the song Heinz Hall, which we played on this show, one of the most downloaded songs of the year last spring. And they just did a Palestine concert in Seattle, a big outdoor event. Thousands of people came, a lot of hip hop artists. Macklemore headlined it. And he said the words, bleep America, from the front, because someone was yelling it from the crowd, and he just went, yeah, bleep America. And it was in the context of one of Macklemore's big issues, which is about the U.S. funding what Israel is doing to Gaza, what Israel's now doing to Lebanon and the West Bank, like that the U.S. is the arsenal, the financier of what is happening. And, you know, and that's why those words came up. Now, since he said that, firestorm, particularly, he's an investor in two of the Seattle teams. He is sort of like the mascot, if you will, of the football team. And his song, Ceiling Can't Hold Us, you know, is a tradition that it plays at the Mariners games. I mean, that's why I said he's like the Spike Lee of Seattle sports-wise. And now it could all be gone. It could all be gone. They want to cut ties with him because he said those words. And yeah, you got to choose your words carefully. I agree with that. But you and I both know that that phrase, the bleep America, whatever, that is hardly some shocking thing to hear at a concert, whether, you know, it's rap concert, heavy metal concert. I mean, things are said on stage. It happens. But I think it's because of the tie with Palestine that they're coming on him like a ton of bricks, just to make that point that you better not speak about this or we will make you radioactive. That's where Lil Wayne took me, man. I don't know if that's what you thought I was gonna say something about, but or maybe not.
I thought you were gonna say something about Janet Jackson and her repeating the. Oh, it hurts to even say it. I was like, Janet, what are you doing? Why would you say that?
But yeah,
that's what I thought you would say. But yeah, no, Macklemore, big, big fan. So much respect for him. The way that he is, you know, using his voice to speak out about, you know, everything that's going on in Gaza, everything that's going on with Palestinians. And it's really amazing. You know what I mean? Hearing it. And we've talked about it before on the show. And yeah, you kind of know the target's on you to have any kind of thing they could use against you when you do that. So it's really unfortunate, you know. I mean, but he's such an ally. He's such an advocate. You know, it's unfortunate. And you wrote a great piece about this as well.
Well, thanks for reading it. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I see. But it's something where they are going to use this like kind of like how they wanted to do the Dixie Chicks, and that's a good kind of parallel to draw. And he's such an incredible talent. I just hope it doesn't happen. I hope they don't Dixie Chicks him. That's what I'm.
Yeah, hoping. Yeah, a huge, you know, especially like in Seattle. Like it looks like they're going for a citywide cancellation, and that would be so sad to me because of how he feels about the city, how the city feels about him. And, you know, he had to really fight for that because, you know, white rapper, you know, there are immediate things for good reason that come to the mind about like, oh, are you just doing this to basically be an extractivist, you know, to just steal from this art form and build your own brand off of it and then leave us high and dry? Is that what this is about? Right. You know, like Chuck D said, you know, Elvis was a hero to most, you know, and Macklemore has gone out of his way, you know, sometimes clumsily, sometimes sweetly, but always with the effort to be like, I will put my money where my mouth is. I will support the community. I will support hip hop. I will support public schools. He's a big funder of a Black History Project.
Right.
In the Seattle schools, for goodness sakes. Yeah. And so to see him taken down by this, to me, it's just a reminder that whether you're a college student, a professor, a union worker, a radio host, you know, you are putting it in the hands of others when you speak out about Palestine. It has become so radioactive. But that's all the more reason why to speak out, because when it's just a few people, it's so much easier to isolate them and destroy them. Like if every musician was speaking about Palestine, they'd leave Macklemore alone. Simple as that.
100%. Just like if every NFL player, you know, took a knee and stood by Kaepernick, you know, they can't, you know, get rid of everybody.
So yeah, they'd still be playing.
And that's why what the WNBA did a few years ago, where the entire league protested with all together and made the commissioner and made the WNBA change their stance. Because at first, the WNBA said, if anybody wears a Black Lives Matter t-shirt, if anybody does anything, you know what I mean, like this, they're going to be fined. They're going to be suspended. And they all did it together. That should be like the model for how to protest. You know what I mean? As a collective. Because
the lesson.
Yeah, definitely.
Then there you get in the problem, Matan, that we live in such an individualistic society. And when we teach about social movements, it's always look at the great heroes who led the movements and never about the fact that if these great heroes were by themselves, they would have almost certainly met with violence or perhaps even death. And some of them, of course, did anyway. But of course, just in terms of building the movement itself, we don't learn about the people who are sometimes referred to as the foot soldiers. You know, we don't look at the base. We just look at the heroes. So I think a lot of this young generation thinks, especially in the age of social media, I have to be out there on an island. I have to be out there and speak by myself and stand tall, when that might be very brave, but it also can be a losing strategy.
Yeah, it could definitely be a losing strategy, but then at the same time, you know, you're kind of forced into being neutral because you don't. And this is where I think Caitlin Clark kind of is going to be interesting to see where she goes from here, because you saw the uproar when she just liked a tweet. She just liked a tweet. That's all she did.
And it was a Taylor Swift one, too.
It was a Taylor Swift tweet, and she liked it. and they almost lost their minds. It would have been interesting to see, since we just referenced it, if she was in the league a few years ago when the entire Black Lives Matter and everything and the entire WNBA all stood together, if she would have stood with everybody, then how would her fan base have reacted?
Fascinating, because from just what I see about Caitlin Clark, I think she would have stood with everybody. She wouldn't have been front and center at the microphone,
right?
But she would have stood with everybody. And I think so. Don't you think, based on the character we've seen so far?
I do.
Yeah, and I think that the shame of it right now is she's doing something that's good for women's basketball, bringing in more fans. And then there's the bad, which she's also bringing in America. And I'm sorry, but we're living in a country where 45% of the country is about to vote for a dude who is, I can't even talk about it, but like, that's our country right now. And so you bring in a section of that, you're going to get this kind of ugliness straight up.
You know, that is mind-boggling. You just mentioned it, but I saw the stats a few days ago about the people who are still supporting the dude he's talking about, Trump. And I'm like, y'all still rolling with him? Really?
Yeah.
I want you to touch on, because we don't have that much time left, I want you to touch on what happened with Eric Adams, with Mayor Eric Adams of New York.
Good gracious.
Yeah, we got to touch on that before we leave.
We'll talk on it, and we got for Magic Mike, we got to say a quick word about Jaden Daniels and the hope he's giving.
Oh, that's true, too.
Here in Washington, D.C. Look, Eric Adams, people know who listen to this show know that, you know, I'm all about the DMV, but I was born and raised in New York City. You've got your ties to New York City as well that run very deep. Here mm-hmm. is the first mayor since 1872 to ever be indicted from the city of New York, which is actually a remarkable thing. Because when you think about the amount of corruption that's existed in City Hall in New York City, I mean, you know, Martin Scorsese did a whole movie about it, Gangs in New York, which was really about City Hall corruption more than it was about gangs. So this has been a part of civic life in New York, in the biggest city in the country, the financial capital. Yes, there is corruption. That's what happens. Yet, this is the first time in the 20s, you know, since 1872, you've seen a mayor get in this kind of trouble. And it's so interesting to me, Tom, because here's Eric Adams. He's the cop mayor. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how he was put forward. He's the one who's going to clean up the streets, you know, after, you know, in the post 2020 moment, you know, people are freaking out about the COVID crime wave and all the rest of it. And it's like, let's elect this guy. And immediately, all of these centrist columnists, political leaders are saying Eric Adams is the future, not just of New York, but the Democratic Party. People are predicting it's going to be Eric Adams for president. All this, like, I mean, the hype was unbelievable. Yet trailing behind the hype was just a history of corruption whispers. It's always been there with Adams. That's just a fact. You know, the corrupt police officer is practically a cliche in New York City, and he mm-hmm. certainly seemed to come from that world. And so many of his lieutenants have been arrested and had their homes raided in recent months by the FBI that you just had to think that at some point it was going to land on him. And sure enough, it did. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's kind of amusing that this is Joe Biden's Justice Department that's going after Adams, because you hear all the time from Trump, you know, they only go after Republicans and it's a politicized Justice Department. But here they are, I got to say, like right before an election, going after one of the most prominent Democrats in the United States. Now, the flip side of that is people will say, well, he's only a Democrat in name. He only ran as a Democrat because that's the only way you can win in New York. Dude is a conservative police officer, mayor. Well, guess what? He also seems like somebody who is very corrupt. And now we're going to see what spills out. Now, I got to just say this also. This is important. He said in a statement last night, a videotaped statement that people sort of have to see to believe, that he is being targeted by Biden's Justice Department, not because of any corruption he might be involved in, but because he dared stand up to the migrant policy of Joe Biden. Now tell me he doesn't sound like he's on an express train to MAGAville when he says something like that, showing some true political colors along the way. That's my general take on it.
No, that's a good point. It's hard to even refute anything that you said. That is a great observation. Yeah, I mean, they raided his top staff. You know what I mean? The same day, like he came to DC for that fight. You know what I mean? And it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
It's interesting too, because anytime you have somebody that prominent who finds himself in the crosshairs of the Justice Department, mm-hmm. all his loyal lieutenants, think about it like this, Etan. The only person they had to spill on was the mayor, because you know how that is. They want you to spill up, always right. spill up. They don't right. care about people lower than you. That's small cheese once you get the big cheese. And they're going after Mayor Adams because that's what you do. You know, that's who they want you to inform on. So here's the question that's going to be so interesting. Who would Eric Adams inform on to get out of prison? Because once you get to the mayor level in New York, now you're talking about he would have to inform on the people giving him the under the table cash. And now we're talking about serious power in New York. You know, the real estate barons, the industrialists, the Wall Street financiers. Is he going to drop dime on them? Because that's all they're going to want is bigger fish than him. Although he may want to keep quiet because those are the very people who could back his future right-wing political ambitions. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out.
This is like a movie.
It isn't it, though? It's I know. Like I feel like I'm Henry Hill just telling you this story.
Right.
Like, we're in Goodfellas land together.
Goodness
like,
gracious.
Directed by Martin Scorsese, Eric right. Adams in The New King of New York or something yeah. like that. Yeah. Respect to the original King of New York, Christopher Walken, Frank White. But before we go, Etan, before we go, yeah. and I want to see if Mike has anything to say about this. Mike, are you on the line? We're not getting Mike, and that's okay, because Jaden Daniels, sir.
Goodness
Jaden
gracious.
Jaden Daniels is electrifying this town. But the one thing about it, Etan, that I want to say before we go, and this is just a call out to all you Washington Commander football fans out there. I have a lot of Washington Commander football fans in my circle. And one of the things that they keep saying over and over again is, we remember RG3. We remember mm-hmm. how our hearts swelled with love that rookie year with RG3. We remember that we thought it was the glory days returning with RG3. And then, of course, injury stepped in, I would argue, triggered by the Shanahan family for not taking care of RG3 on the field. But the point is that people are scared about getting their hearts broken again.
This just
so there's
feels
like,
different,
there's like
Dave.
This reticence, you know, but I sense it. Like my friends are like in love, but scared. Like you're dating somebody you think might break your heart.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it. And I mean, you can understand it. I mean, it's not like an understandable hesitation to pour all the way in for the Commanders. I understand it. Just hoping for the best.
Yeah, hoping for the best. The young man is already 23. He seems like he's got a great head on his shoulders. He's got great charisma. He's got a great smile. The team clearly on the sideline is already gravitating to him as right. a sort of source of charisma. It does remind me, you know, not because of his style of play, which everybody's talking about, but in terms of leadership, he reminds me a lot of the 22-year-old Lamar Jackson, who just had people on the sideline. That was his MVP year, just his second year in the league. I was just like, wow, these 35-year-old veterans are just gravitating to him. Yeah. Like, you know, like a leader. And right. that's so rare. And I see it in Jaden Daniels.
We can't forget that he played 55 games in college and played 5 years. And that makes a big difference. That's the way the old quarterbacks back in the 80s, 70s, and 80s used to do.
That's true.
There's Mike. There he is. I was calling point, for Mike. You, Mike.
Good point.
Mike, you know,
I'm not scared at all
the
for the young man. I'm really not. I think, you know, He has a good head on his shoulders. I think that he'll know when to run, when not to run. We saw he finally learned how to slide last week. So
yeah.
I'm not scared of him getting injured. It's football, and there's always a possibility of any player getting injured. But I feel good about this, way better than I did with the RG3, you know, way better.
Wow. So you don't feel like you're on the edge of your seat thinking, I fell in love with RG3. I don't want to get my heart broken again.
Nah, not at all. It just feels different. And I think everything that surrounds it is different. The organization, coaches, all that. I mean, I know Gibbs was there, but that was Gibbs, you know, 2.0, which wasn't Gibbs 1.0.
Look, I feel very different as well. It's a new era. And Jaden Daniels, just so you know, you are always welcome to come on the Collision.
Make it happen, Dave.
I'll make some calls. So it's on Thomas. You feeling good?
Feeling good. Feeling good. Great show.
It was a fantastic show. Thank you so much, Etan. Thank you so much to Magic Mike. For everybody listening in New York and not the DMV, big protest today at 3 p.m. against Netanyahu. Coming to the United Nations. Go to Bryant Park right in front of the New York Public Library on 42nd and 5th. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Bethesda Theater presents Spyro Gyro celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
Bruce Hornsby and the Noisemakers bring their Spirit Trail 25th anniversary tour to the Warner Theater this Saturday, September 28th. Details at WarnerTheaterDC.com.
On Sunday, October 6th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents De Colores, celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month. Our beloved Sunday programmers will explore the rich musical palette of Latinx artists, from the strings of Villa Lobos to Salsera Graciela, to the Cuban jazz and electronic sounds of Omar Sosa. That De Colores, celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month on WPFW, building a better world. One broadcast at a time.
WPFW's This Is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience presents a fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame and Carl Malcolm on Saturday, October the 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C. Tickets available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW. All proceeds benefit WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Attention jazz and creative music fans. On Friday, September 27th, New York meets DC when pianist Matthew Shipp's trio performs on a double bill with Washington's own pianist and bandleader Janelle Gill and her trio at the NYU campus in downtown DC. Matthew Shipp will also stick around after the concert for a question and answer session with the audience, moderated by Bushmeat Sound System, aka Dr. Thomas Stanley. This concert on Friday, September 27th, is presented by Capital Bop. Tickets and more info can be found at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com.
Jazz musician Herbie Hancock and his band,
featuring Terrence Blanchard grace the stage of the Warner Theater on Friday, September 27th. Info available at warnertheater.com.
Peace, everyone. I'm Brother Jamil, and in the Yardbird Suites tradition established by our dear brother, Askia Muhammad, we continue every Tuesday morning from